my first acting convention, I obviously was invited by Kim Slater, but I've never been on one of those before. I've done Features West, and I've actually done tours for Reuters in the Far East back a few years ago. But this is my first tag convention, so I'm happy to be here, and I hope y'all enjoy what I have to say. I have been in the business, like I said earlier, 14 years, and my primary goal has been to advance the field of early layer analysis to the point where I was sort of disappointed when I recently got involved that there wasn't quite the regimentation or the scientific approach. There was a lot of subjectivity to LA Wave that didn't really appeal to me. So after reading all the books and all the material, I just started realizing over time that there could be a lot of room for improvement. And so my goal has been to try to make LA Wave more scientific, and over the 14 years that I've been working on it, I eventually changed the name of my approach because it became so different from LA Wave, or so many additions were made to the wave theory, that I decided to eventually call it Neo Wave, sort of a short form of Neo Wave, which is what everyone told me I should call it, and I was a little too embarrassed to do that, so I decided Neo Wave was a good compromise. The Neo Wave concept is similar to thinking of maybe general mathematics as compared to calculus or algebra to calculus. It's an improvement, but it doesn't change the foundation of wave theory at all. It just adds a great deal to it, and I'll show you some diagrams of this later on. To start off, during the 1980s, the wave theory became real popular in the early to mid and late 1980s. And it was during that time frame that the first problems with wave theory began. The early wave also was over the 1980s, which is when I was really getting involved in markets a great deal. And the problem was, because of the increased use, everyone looking for all the simple patterns, the five waves up, the three waves down, that the market started to go through almost, you could say, convulsions, structural convulsions, or an evolutionary process where it had to start adapting to fit the new realities that too many people were looking for five wave moves and patterns that everyone saw in these books. So as the changes occurred, most people still had the same old books, so they didn't realize that the transformation of patterns was occurring. They realized that wave theory wasn't working as well as it used to, because obviously these patterns weren't allowing them to predict markets as well as they did during the 80s. It was right around the early 1990s that wave prediction really started to decline by most people prominent in the business. And that's when Neo Wave became more and more a reality for me, that I realized that these things had to be presented to the public, because otherwise the theory might die into obscurity, because it was becoming less and less accurate over time. The orthodox approach to LA Wave is really based on two primary things: pattern recognition and Fibonacci numbers. And Neo Wave takes that same core and then adds on to it a framework of logic, limits, and self-confirmation. And these are processes that, once added to the process, make it tremendously more scientific, more objective, so that when you're trading, you don't have to always guess or wonder, am I right about what's happening? Am I wrong about what's happening? A lot of theories and any approach to technical analysis generally always leaves that openness in your head, you might say, that you really don't know for sure. Is this the time it's going to work? Is this the time it's not going to work? And by taking some of these additional approaches that I'll show you today, you'll get to the point where you really know with a much greater sense of certainty whether you're going to be right or you're not going to be right, and why, and you have a very logical explanation for why the market's going to do what it's supposed to do. I'm going to go ahead and give you a brief overview of wave theory, just so for those of you who may not be familiar at all. I'm going to give you a brief overview first, and then we're going to get into all the innovations that I've made. Really five primary innovations to wave theory, and then we'll go into details about each one of those. So let's start with the wave theory. The market's in a trend. The trend's going to be five waves up. The corrections are going to be three waves down. That's an extreme simplification of reality, but the most important differentiating factor between wave theory and most other types of techniques is that wave theory is one of the only fractally based concepts of market analysis, which means that I have something to point here with. Can I use a pen here? That means that a market will evolve over time in the same way, but on different time frames. And this allows you to pinpoint where you are theoretically at all times. In actuality, that doesn't happen. But if you look at this pattern here, you'll see a five-wave advance occurring. And if you look closely within the third wave, you'll see the same five-wave pattern, almost in an identical design as the larger five-wave move. And if you understand the rules that go into creating these five-wave patterns, and they apply both on long time frames, short time frames, then you can start to predict the actual conclusion of these patterns to project as big in most forms of time. But the self-similarity not only applies to patterns going with the trend, and this could be going up or down, it doesn't matter which direction it's heading. The corrective patterns also have the same phenomenon present. If you look at this zigzag decline, it's called, you see how the A wave is retraced a small amount by the B wave, and then you head down for the C wave, and this creates a trend downward, but it's a corrective trend. It's only composed of three primary segments: the down move, the sideways period, and then the down move. So that's why a lot of people say when you're in corrections, they're three-wave patterns. When you're in pulsions, which is what this call is called, they're five-wave patterns. But look within the B wave of this decline, you see a tiny little zigzag again, an ABC, that looks relatively similar to the large pattern. It's a little simpler, not quite so much detail, but the general idea is that the pattern is still present. And this self-similarity occurs all throughout the wave theory, and it's one of the greatest benefits because it does allow you to categorize behavior, know when you're seeing it, what kind of behavior you're in before you finish it, and each pattern has mathematical parameters that are associated with it that allow you to predict specifically where it should finish, how much time it should take, and again, how much complexity should be consumed by the market during the process. Any questions about this page before I go on? This is chart number one for those on the cassette tape. Any questions? Okay, let's go to the next chart. So the foundation of neo wave, it's really not the foundation of other wave, because it's hard to imagine, but under general other wave theory, for 50 years, no one ever gave you an explanation or a definition of what a wave is. And the whole theory is based on this concept, and yet there was no definition for what this whole theory was based on. So monowaves are the term that I gave to define the most microscopic element of wave theory. It's sort of thinking about the discovery of atoms in physics. The monowave is the building blocks of all patterns. And when you build up wave count properly, the monowaves will connect one after the next into larger and larger formations, and there'll be certain rules that are followed by the pattern. And once you have all these rules followed, then you can start to identify completed formations such as zigzags and flats and triangles and all these different categories of patterns that apply or occur under the wave theory. But a monowave, just to describe it to you specifically, when you're plotting your charts correctly, which I'll show you how to do after a while, a monowave is the distance from one change in price direction in the chart to the next change. And that distance between those two is what I call a monowave. And once you start plotting charts properly and you understand this concept, it allows you to get much more specific about your analysis than was possible before. Another aspect of wave theory is degree and categorization. You have two ways of categorizing: impulsive, if it's against the trend, it's corrective. And again, you see the same diagrams that we showed before, but within that process, you're going to have degrees. And if you have a pattern labeled 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, those in that sequence all have to be considered the same degree. And under general wave theory, there's no definition for what determines a degree, and whether one degree is related to another, and how that happens, and how you can know whether you're doing your analysis correct or not. I'll show you some techniques today that show specifically how this needs to be done, so that you're not left in this continuous never-never land about whether one wave is connected to another and how you know this, and it's just sort of a guessing game for a lot of people. The other way that they're categorized, or I think I mentioned both, is degree and class. Degree has to do with a general idea of time and price consumption. So if something takes 10 days and $10, you shouldn't assume that it's related to a pattern that takes 100 days and $100. Obviously, that's not logical. You can't really logically say those are the same degree, and if you try to do those sorts of things, your counts will be wrong. Let's go into chart number four. This gives you a visual idea of how neo wave fits into LA wave, and then I'm actually going to some of the specific innovations. I just wanted you to get a visual idea of the fact that I haven't changed the wave theory, I've just added a great deal of additional information and techniques and procedures to the whole process. So these are the five important innovations. There probably are some others, but I wanted to narrow it down to what I consider to be the most important. The first thing, when you're attempting to make the jump from wave theory, orthodox, what I call orthodox wave theory, to neo-wave theory, is you've got to begin producing the right kind of charts. If you don't produce the right kind of charts, you'll never see the phenomenons that I'm talking about today. And if you don't see them, then you either won't believe they occur, or you'll just never be able to get the specificity of your analysis down to what I consider to be almost a scientific process. You know, my goal for 14 years has been to make it so scientific that you can predict precisely how far a market's going to go, how long it's going to last, how complicated it's going to be while it's getting there, and very specific details along the way so that you know you're right or you're wrong as it's taking place. You don't have to find out later on down the road when you lose some money on a trade that you were wrong. You can usually know within, as the pattern's progressing almost instantly, when something goes wrong, you'll know it. You need to get out or reassess the trade. You have a question? I'm going to be showing you a called wave charts, and I'll show you how to make those shortly. Okay, that'll be the first thing you're going to do. So you want to make the right kind of charts, and you also have to use specific kinds of data. Rigidity has to do with the fact that neo-wave doesn't allow for the kind of flexibility that you usually see with L-wave. L-wave, a lot of times see people say, well, this could be a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it could be an ABC, and sometimes a third wave extends, and sometimes a 2 and 4 alternate, and there's a lot of iffy stuff. Well, under neo-wave, there is virtually no flexibility to the theory. So you're going to see rules that have to be obeyed, have to be present. If they aren't, the count's wrong and something else is taking place. So there's not all this wishy-washiness that takes place with standard wave theory. Self-definition is a very unique part of neo-wave. That's when the market allows you to specifically predict how it's going to unfold based on what's previously happened. And I'll show some examples of this. Neo-wave limits have to do with knowing exactly how much time and price and complexity a move is allowed to take to you. Self-confirmation is the most important part of neo-wave. That allows you to specifically define, right after a formation is finished, exactly what needs to happen to prove that your analysis is correct so you can gain confidence in what you're doing. Let's start off with innovation number one. This is chart, and this is what I call market suitability. These are the things you want to write down. So open your book to chart 6, and you want to write down all these things relating to proper charting. Okay, the first thing you absolutely want to have, and I'll show you with it, I'm sorry, to be, in my opinion, logical and scientific and dependable. And if it isn't, then you're not going to be able to trade, because you're not going to have the confidence required to trade. If you're using data that's inaccurate, has distortions built into it, your analysis will not be accurate over time, and you're going to always have problems. And that's why the things you're seeing today is all part of the massive standardization of wave theory, so that it leaves virtually nothing else but just your analysis left. It's, you know, whether you're doing your analysis correct or not. But we're eliminating all the potential dangers so that when you really do your analysis, you can depend on it. So you want to use cash data, that's number one. You're going to be plotting, like I said earlier, neo-wave plots, and let me show you some examples. Let's start with market suitability. These are some of the things you want to write down also in your book about what constitutes a suitable market. Not only do you want to use cash data, but you want to make sure the item you're following is not a consumed item. If it's a consumed item, it doesn't follow a growth decay cycle perpetually. If a market such as corn, you're following that, you're consumed. It's gone. It doesn't exist anymore. So you don't want to follow agricultural markets with L-wave. A lot of people try it, but I think it's a big mistake because you're not going to have the dependability of behavior over time. You want to use things like currencies that have a perpetual life, stock indexes generally, gold, things that are indestructible preferably, have a perpetual life, but their current value possibly builds in the past, but it does not automatically degrade with time, such as food products. I mean, obviously a food product, the longer it sits in a warehouse, the less and less it's worth. So you want something that its value is not dependent on time, the passing of time, but is dependent on people's desires and people's actions. And if their actions show that they're interested in something, then the price would go up. If they're not, the price would go down. And that's going to be human action-based, the value of the product. It has to be affordable to thousands of people so that you create the net Neo wave or the Elliott wave effect in the market. The prices have to be readily available so everyone can watch it and react to it. Yes, first. What bonds work. You want to use cash bonds though. You want to get cash data. All cash data, it's not as easy to work with because generally you have to plot it by hand. So there's a little extra work involved, but if your goal is to make money and for wave analysis to be accurate, then you have really no other choice.
Well, then work on
yields? Yes, that's why I use cash yields.
How about large
number
of big stocks?
The bigger the stock, the better, but it has to be pretty big to be safe. You know, IBM, Microsoft, really large companies probably work. I've really never spent much time studying individual stocks for wave analysis, but as long as those rules are applied, there's thousands of people and it's indestructible and so forth, then it should work. Any other questions? Yes. Not really. That's a consumed item, so the dangers are present. And for every one of these elements that I mentioned earlier that is not inherent in the market you're following, you're going to run into some problems. So I'd say for every element, using cash data or not, whether it has a perpetual life or not, and so forth, about 20% of the reliability of the wave theory will be taken away for each one of those elements. And so it just gets more and more dangerous. Any other questions before I go on?
Quickly, you mentioned gold. You don't view gold as being indestructible?
No, gold's an indestructible item. You can always remanufacture and recapture it. So it's always around. There's just as much gold now as there ever was. So I'd say it's a unique situation, because silver
for jewelry is still in production.
It could be, that's right. People could sell it right back into the market and remanufacture it. Whereas silver and things like that are destructible and they decay with time. So most metals don't apply, but gold is uniquely situated.
So you wouldn't use it on silver, but you could use it on gold.
You could try, but it's more dangerous because it's a decaying product. Yes, wave theory is strictly a gauge of mass psychology. So when you're thinking of a market, you think, is this a market that primarily functions on mass psychology, or is it something that functions on weather? And if it's weather, you really want to avoid it. You want to avoid things that are not within the mass psychological realm. And if it's not human, if human action doesn't change the value, nature does, you're not dealing with a market you should try to apply wave theory to. Any other questions?
What's left?
Well, stock indexes of all sorts, probably even sectors, things like the Dow, the S&P, gold, bonds, currencies, can't think of any others right now, but those would be some primary markets.
Mass psychology.
Right, mass psychology, definitely, that's what you want. Any other questions on previous chart? That's chart 7, I think. Okay, let's go to chart number 8. This is probably one of, yes? Well, it's still, that's true. It's human action that is creating that extra value, and the product is spread out over time. It takes time to disseminate into the system so people have time to react to it and think about it. It's not instantly, the value or the supply of gold doesn't double all of a sudden. It takes a long time to change over time. So it gradually changes because of human action. It's not because of anything else. Nature didn't come and throw gold out of the sky. So, man's doing something to make it happen. Okay? This is, I think, one of the more important charts that you might see, just as a reality check of why you really shouldn't use futures data when you're doing market analysis. This shows the price of gold just over about a 6-month time frame from March 95 to about August 95, where I've purposely superimposed the high and the low. Even though they didn't quite match, I forced them to match to show you that price and time, they were identical up to that point. And you can see over approximately 6 months' time what happened between the cash data, which is on top, and the futures data, which is on bottom. Futures data deteriorates time, and that's because of holding costs being subtracted every month, and it amounts to about $20 per year of downward distortion in almost all markets, but specifically in gold, for most futures markets. Some futures markets distort upward, but most of them distort downward with time. And just data on chart 8, you possibly could, but on the cash data, you clearly could not, because the market never trended on a cash basis. So it's the futures distortion that's making you think you're in an impulsive pattern or some other kind of formation when you're really in a perfectly sideways market. So that's one real key reason why cash data has to be used. Any questions on this chart before gone? Well, futures contract disobeys one of the important rules you mentioned earlier. It's not a perpetual contract. It has an expiration date.
Right.
So that expiration date causes distortions. And the minute you jump to the next contract, you have this big jump in price, and then the decay starts again. So it doesn't fit all the rules required earlier of a good market to follow the wave theory. So yes, you do not want to use futures data to do wave analysis. Okay? This does make your job a little bit harder, but it's not that difficult to get cash data nowadays. It used to be a lot harder when I first got into business. I mean, it was really difficult to find cash data. Okay, that's first question on plot. You want to make chart to see, figure out which came first, and you always want to plot what came first, and then move across in time, and what came second, plot second, and connect them with a diagonal line, either this way or this way. If you don't do that, you're never going to see wave patterns properly in a market. And this is another reason why futures charts are bad, because they don't show wave patterns, they show bar charts. And bar charts don't create wave phenomenon very well. It leaves a lot of flexibility for you to decide, well, was this a correction or was it not a correction? By using wave charts, you can clearly always see exactly where the corrections are, where they aren't, and how they relate to other patterns in price, time, and that, you know, complexity. Okay, so anybody who does not understand the process of making charts here? It doesn't matter the time frame. Let's say I use daily charts as my shortest time frame almost always, unless the daily chart is so simple that I can't make any conclusions from it, so I'll go to hourly data. But generally speaking, let's say you're using a daily chart. You take the high and low for the entire day. You look at a 5-minute chart, 10-minute chart, just something that's much shorter so you can see when the high of the day occurred, when the low of the day occurred. You want to plot one before the other. Whichever came first gets plotted first, and then you move over time. So let's say, I don't know if it'll actually draw on here. You have a high here. No, let's just use the actual chart. You have a high here. Let's use this one right here. A high here and a low here. The high came first. It gets plotted first. It gets connected to the previous day's high, which occurred second. And then you draw a straight line from that high down to the same day's low. When the next day opens, that high occurred first. You plot that first. Connect the two dots. The low occurred second. You connect it down to the low, and so forth. And you always separate them by time. That way you get a continuous flow of movements. You actually can see waves. I mean, obviously these look like waves, which is what you're trying to identify. When you're using bar charts, it's a little shakier, a little more difficult to figure out what's going on. Any questions on that? Well, these are all maybe simple ideas, but when you add it all together, it makes a big difference. Okay, rigidity is innovation number two. Rigidity has to do with the fact that there's virtually no flexibility with NeoWave compared to orthodox LA wave. For example, if you're looking at chart number 10, most people who would see a move like this, if they're on the charts properly and they're seeing wave patterns, they would call this a five-wave move. It goes up, down, up, down, up, five times. The corrections don't overlap, and for most people that's good enough. But the problem is that this kind of simplicity and non-adherence to important concepts virtually guarantees your analysis is going to be wrong. The most important rule of wave theory is that in an impulsive pattern, one of the waves has to extend, which means one of the waves has to be significantly longer than the other two. So if wave one is $10, wave three is $11, and wave five needs to be 19, 20, something significantly different, usually 161% or more of the distance of the other two. If you don't have that present, you don't have an impulsive pattern. So that's a rule you do not want to avoid, and you always want to make sure it's applied. The next thing you always want to see in a five-wave move is you want to see alternation between waves two and four. If you don't have that, then you don't have a proper five-wave move. So that means wave two has to take a different amount of time, a different amount of price, different amount of complexity, retrace wave one a different amount than wave four retraces wave three. All these things have to be present for you to get proper alternation between waves two and four. In this case, you can see there's virtually no alternation whatsoever. So these two patterns can't be counted as waves two and four on chart 10. So immediately when you see something like this diagram, it sets into motion a different scenario, which if you look on chart 11, this would be the scenario I would have right from the start. I would not consider that move a five-wave move because it doesn't obey the rules of an impulsive pattern. It obeys the rules of a corrective pattern. So most people, if you remember the previous chart on 10, if you count this as a five-wave move, your expectation here would be that the market's going to go through a larger correction, maybe a sideways period, or have a major top because it's the end of an impulsive sequence. But in fact, because of its design, because it doesn't obey the rules of an impulsive pattern, it's actually corrective, and you would go through another correction and then another advance. And you would know this just because of the way it's designed. So most people would go back and revise their scenario because they're starting off with a very flexible, limited rule base, and it doesn't allow them to be very sure about what's happening. So they're constantly guessing, constantly changing, and revising. You're going to see anybody in the whole world who doesn't really can say that. But that's because my foundation, starting off the counts, I had a very rigid structure that did not allow me to have all kinds of different opinions that turned out eventually to be wrong and forced me to constantly revise my scenario. So that's the whole point of all this. You want to be right from the very start. You don't have to constantly change counts. You don't have to constantly wonder if you're right or wrong. All these techniques are designed to avoid those problems. So complexity. This is another important step in the process. If you're looking at a chart, most people don't realize this at all, but the more complexity you have on the chart, the more difficult it is to figure out what's going on. So if you look at these diagrams on chart 12, you want to mark in your book which diagrams are the best and which ones aren't. So we're going to stop here for a tape look over.